A large-scale saga of corruption, justice, and overwhelming relevance that's at once gripping and eye-opening, even if you're the sort of news junkie who thinks they already know the story. That's from Owen Gleiberman of Variety. One of the films we're reviewing is The Report, starring Adam Driver. We'll also be reviewing Dark Waters, two films about investigative journalism, and that's why the Mount Rushmore this week is journalism movies. And yes, I'm a journalism major. Went to school for radio and television arts at Ryerson University. Thank you so much for checking us out here on Cinephile. As always, back with my man, Joe. We have some great news here at Cadence 13, which is our company, regarding our NFL podcast, which is doing very well, the GM Shuffle. So I need your support now for Cinephile. So help us out here. Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review. Tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, and get the word going here. Because honestly, GM Shuffle, we're doing great. We can use a little more pub here when it comes to our beloved labor of love. We'll also, of course, be talking about the Oscar nominations. We'll do that momentarily and what all of it means, my reaction to it. And honestly, tough to find a better guest than Scott Feinberg. He knows everything when it comes to the awards season. His podcast is called Awards Chatter, and you can check him out at The Hollywood Reporter, where he's an excellent writer. And Scott's tremendous. He's going to be with us, I think, almost 30 minutes, talking about the Oscars, his thoughts on Joker, why Joker did so well, whether Parasite can win Best Picture. Lots of really, really interesting stuff from Scott. And he interviewed my favorite actor, Al Pacino, recently in his podcast. He tells me some Pacino stuff as well. Here we go. This is from Dr. G, The Shrink. If you have an interest in intelligent, straightforward reviews of movies while at the same time receiving some education which promotes your transition to becoming a more complete cinephile, this is your spot. Adnan had insightful observations, interviews with prominent people, often outstanding, reflect his character and intelligence. I've tried other popular movie review podcasts. They pale in comparison. Oh, this is a rave review. Thank you, Dr. G, who is The Shrink. Another one here from T-Dog. Love the podcast. I consider myself a recently converted cinephile. You showcase a deeper way to look at films that connect. My one suggestion is around the great Total Recall segment. What if you also considered other great movies that weren't nominated for Oscars in the given year? If we're rewriting the Oscars, I'd love to hear if you think a key movie or two got gypped on nominations. That is up to Joe. That is Joe's segment. He puts it together, so that seems like more work for Joe. Joe, do you want to do that more? Then you have to comb through and find other notable omissions. That sounds like a lot of work, but it's up to you.
I mean, I think we could definitely do it for certain years. If you look at this year's Oscars, you know, there's a few omissions that weren't nominated that probably should have been. So I like the idea. We can, you know, look at it going forward.
We'll look at it. The-Justin79 saying Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is too long and The Irishman isn't too long is a terrible take. Even though I am disagreeing with your takes a little more than I once did, I still enjoy the pod. I appreciate the review. All right. Honestly, you don't have to agree with me. That's fine. As long as you listen. SN Live 888, big fan of the podcast since its inception. Super excited that the Bada Binge is over and love the new Total Recall segment. I'm definitely enjoying the increased number of reviews recently. I'm cranking out the reviews, I promise you. Two this week, we'll do two next week. You want to look ahead? I'll look ahead with you right now. SAG nominations, we'll review next week because the SAG's Screen Actors Guild are coming up this Sunday. And I'll review a couple films, Terrence Malick's film, The Hidden Life, and also Waves. And then 2 weeks from now, I'll be doing documentaries because I've got a bunch of those. Now that we know what got nominated, American Factory, which is supposed to be excellent. And I believe Democracy at Work. And then 3 weeks from now here on Cinephile, I got my foreign films. Parasite's going to win. We all know that. But I'm also going to watch Les Miserables, which got nominated, and Honeyland, which is a movie from Macedonia. So if you like the increased number of reviews, don't worry. I got you covered coming up here in the Oscar season. So really appreciate all these reviews and comments. All right, let's get to the Oscars, folks. Every time I get mad, although this time I was bracing for it, because if you don't get a SAG nomination or a Golden Globe nomination, then you're not going to get nominated for an Oscar. So I already knew De Niro was going to get snubbed for Best Actor. But seriously, folks, listen to me. How can a film be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, two supporting actors, Best Screenplay, Best Editing, Best Production Design, Best Score, all this stuff, and yet the lead actor, the guy who actually is the Irishman, actually doesn't get nominated for Best Actor? It makes no sense to me. So basically you're saying the entire film is great, but the lead actor, the guy who's carrying the film, could have been better. Not nominated for Best Original Score. I love Robbie Robertson's score. I wish it did. That's another issue I have with it. Anyways, Bob didn't get nominated. It would have been his first Best Actor nomination since Cape Fear, which was 1991. So I'm incensed about that. As I say to Scott Feinberg later on the podcast, you can't just get mad. You got to say, okay, what would you take out? Banderas gets nominated for Pain and Glory, which I was really happy about. Almodovar film, if you're a fan of the podcast, you heard me review it, and I liked it. It's his first ever nomination, I believe. I mean, he's a terrific actor. Come on, it's Desperado. Leo, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, great. Driver, Marriage Story, I'd vote for him to win. Jonathan Pryce, The Two Popes, thrilled to see this. Link, James Link, that's right. He's Link from Glengarry Glen Ross. 72 years old, first ever nomination for Best Actor, I love it. So I would have put Bob ahead of Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, who I don't think should win, or even much less get nominated, and I think he's going to win. So figure that stuff out. Let's go through Best Picture. Ford versus Ferrari, formulaic, but it's fun. Irishman, I hope it wins. Jojo Rabbit, great to see this. Joker, disagree. Little Women, a little bit surprised. I didn't think it'd get a Best Picture nomination. Marriage Story, terrific. 1917, one of the best pictures of the year. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, liked it better the second time. And Parasite, elated. I mean, I was thrilled to see a Best Picture. The director, we got Marty, should win. Don't think he's going to win. Todd Phillips, Joker, biggest issue I have. There's no way he should be nominated. I'd have Noah Baumbach for Marriage Story or Greta Gerwig for Little Women. Mendes is up for 1917. He might win. Amazing. QT, sure. And Bong Joon-ho, Parasite, love it. Bong Joon-ho might win. Let's watch out for the DGA, Directors Guild Awards. If Bong Joon-ho wins the DGA, or Mendes does, that's the big indicator for the Oscar, as much as I'm pulling for Marty, of course. All right, so Best Actress, Cynthia Erivo, Harriet, excellent. And a rare nomination, by the way, for a person of color. If you want to get angry, but Oscar's so white, yet again, very homogenous when it came to the issue of color. But Cynthia Erivo does get in for Harriet. Great to see that. She's excellent. Scarlett Johansson, Marriage Story, I'd vote for her to win. Saoirse Ronan, Little Women, happy to see this as well, because she got ignored by the SAGs, get nominated for a Globe. Charlize Theron, Bombshell, sure. I thought the movie was good, obviously, and she's very good. Renee Zellweger, Judy, is absolutely going to win. Talk about lock of the year. Put as much money as you have, mortgage, life savings. Renee is going to win for Judy. Average movie, great performance. We did Best Actor, as I mentioned. Best Supporting Actor. I mean, this is as low as it gets. So they followed the Globes here. I thought the SAGs, where Jamie Foxx got nominated ahead of Anthony Hopkins, Foxx for Just Mercy, that might happen. Instead, it is the SAGs. And this is about as low as it gets. Tom Hanks, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Anthony Hopkins, The Two Popes. Al Pacino, first Oscar nomination since Scent of a Woman, which was 1992. Way to go, Al. Ignored for Donnie Brasco and The Insider. Joe Pesci for The Irishman, tremendous. Michael Lombardi, all in. And Brad Pitt is going to win for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I wouldn't say bet the house on this one, but very, very strong chance. I mean, Brad, I believe, is in his 50s now. He's never won. He's a great actor, handsome, all the rest of it. Brad's going to win. So that's your supporting role. No issues there. Best actress in a supporting role. I've seen, of the 20 nominees in the four acting categories, I saw 19 of them, 95%. The one I didn't see is Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell, which I heard is a very average movie, despite the fact Ben Lyons is a fan. I'll have to watch that now. Kathy Bates got nominated. Laura Dern's going to win for Marriage Story. Again, bet the house. Scarlett Johansson, thrilled to see this. Rare to get a double nomination. She's up for lead. She's up for supporting for Jojo Rabbit. Florence Pugh, Little Women, this was my biggest shock. She gets in ahead of Jennifer Lopez for Hustlers. J-Lo's hot, looks great, I got it, but the movie's pretty average. And more people, as Scott Feinberg will tell us later, saw Little Women, hence Pugh, 24-year-old in. I loved her, of course, for Midsummer, which is a movie that was completely ignored. And Margot Robbie for Bombshell. How good is that actress, man? God, Marty found her in Wolf of Wall Street. She gets nominated for lead actress, I, Tonya. Now supporting actress, not even 30. What a life Margot Robbie has. So she's in there. Those are the acting nominations. I'll fly through a few more of these. Original screenplay. You know, QT is doing pretty well winning these for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'd love to see Noah Baumbach win for Marriage Story, and I'd love to see Bong Joon-ho win, him and Han Jin-won for Parasite. Great nominations there. Knives Out, Priscilla Hates It, Rian Johnson. And 1917, Mendes' first ever time co-writing a screenplay. He's nominated with Christy Wilson-Cairns for 1917. Adapted, God, please, can it be Steve Zaillian for The Irishman? He won, of course, for Schindler's List way back when. He also wrote and directed Searching for Bobby Fischer. Taika Waititi is up for Jojo Rabbit. Ridiculous nomination. Todd Phillips, Scott Silver for Joker. Greta Gerwig is in for Little Women, so that's nice to see. And Anthony McCartson, one of the real surprises of the year, is how good The Two Popes is. I'm so happy the screenplay was recognized, along with Price and Hopkins. Anthony McCartson is the guy there. Other than that, animated feature film, Frozen 2, big omission there, but How to Train Your Dragon is in. I will do some animated movies coming up in Cinefile, because I've got screeners for not only I Lost My Body, but also Klaus, or is it Klaus? It's currently on Netflix, but I'm going to watch my screener shortly for that one. The shorts I haven't seen, the documentaries, as I mentioned, I'll be reviewing American Factory and The Edge of Democracy and Honeyland. That's the one from Macedonia. Those movies coming up. Other than that, you fly through them. Original score is going to be Hildur from Joker, although it should be Thomas Newman for 1917. Costume design, love seeing Sandy Powell get nominated for The Irishman. Makeup and hairstyling, got to like Bombshell there. Film editing is always a key category. Very rarely do you win Best Picture with an editing nomination. So these are your editing nominees. Ford versus Ferrari, not going to win Best Picture. Joker, okay, 11 nominations, which is insane for a derivative, mediocre, disappointing film. Parasite, that's a tremendous sign. This could actually win Best Picture, which is amazing. South Korean film winning Best Picture, well, it's up for editing. Jojo Rabbit, polarizing, but also was number 8 on my top 10 of the year, and then The Irishman, which I still believe is the favorite. We'll have a better idea after this Sunday. Screen Actors Guild, if The Irishman wins the SAG Best Ensemble, big indicator. If Parasite wins, put a few bucks on Parasite winning Best Picture. If you win Best SAG Ensemble, I mean, that's the actors. The actors are the biggest voting body here. That's a real indication of what could happen. So we go through some snubs people were talking about. I mentioned J-Lo. Awkwafina for The Farewell might have been nice. Lupita Nyong'o for Us, which I didn't care for. Don't think she should have been nominated, but some people did mention that. I mentioned Greta Gerwig snubbed. Taron Egerton is a surprise for Rocketman. Because again, if you get a SAG nomination and a Golden Globe nomination and a BAFTA nomination, you got to think you're getting in. So Taron Egerton getting bounced out by Antonio Banderas was a surprise to me. And he really did sing all of Elton John's songs. Rami Malek wins, despite the fact he didn't sing. He lip-synced as Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody. Go figure that one. Bale ignored for Ford vs. Ferrari. I was fine with that. The movie was okay. I don't think he should have been nominated. Adam Sandler, not 9 for Uncut Gems. A C-plus cinema score. That means people, when they watched the movie, did not like it. Got a lot of buzz in the industry. Safdie brothers are very talented. But the movie did not break through. Tough work there for Sandman. I would have liked to see George McKay nominated for 1917. He's the lead actor. But again, way too many other people. Eddie Murphy's ignored for Dolomite Is My Name. I love Eddie. Other snubs here, Beyonce for Spirit. Well, I think life will go on for Beyonce somehow, some way. She'll find some reason to live. Frozen 2, I already mentioned, also is a notable snub. So that is our Oscar nominations recap. Joe, questions, comments, concerns?
I would have liked to see Awkwafina get nominated for Best Actress. Especially as you pointed out, the Oscars kind of being homogenous. It would have been nice to see her there. But I'm looking at Christian Bale, Eddie Murphy, and De Niro. I feel like De Niro, of the three that were snub, is the strongest to get in for lead actor, but who would he replace? And I take it you would say Joaquin Phoenix for that, correct?
Yes. I would have said Joaquin Phoenix should have been out, Bob in. But the one that was the most surprising was Antonio Banderas. The only indication he might get nominated, he won Best Actor from the LA Film Critics, but again, did not get nominated from the SAG. So that was where I thought Taron Egerton would get in there. So you're right. Eddie Murphy was great. I mean, Dolomite Is My Name was, you had it in your top 10. His only other Oscar nomination ever was for Dreamgirls and Supporting. So the Oscars usually love actors playing real life people, especially other actors. So that was Eddie's best chance playing Rudy Ray Moore, but doesn't happen this time around. Any other ideas?
I really want to see the movie Missing Link now as far as the animated films go. It's been getting a lot of buzz. You know me, I love animated movies. And it's also stop motion too, which I appreciate. Definitely going to put that on my list going forward.
Good work out of you, Joe, mentioning that, because that was a stunner when it won at the Globes. People are like, wow. And they clearly were not prepared to win. Everybody thought it was going to be Toy Story 4 or even How to Train Your Dragon. So I still think going into the Oscars, it's Toy Story 4 or How to Train Your Dragon. Toy Story 4 did win the Critics' Choice Awards, which I was unable to attend this past Sunday. But you're right, Missing Link has a chance. And I've obviously seen How to Train Your Dragon and Toy Story 4. So I will knock out I Lost My Body in Klaus and then give you my official opinion. But you're right to mention Missing Link. That is a way that it's got a real chance right now. And of course, Gold Derby, by the way, go to goldderby.com. They've got all their odds now updated as well. So that's always fun to see. Speaking of Chris Beecham, who was a guest in the pod, if you'll recall, about a month ago, he said he was hoping for Avengers Endgame to get nominated for Best Picture. That did not happen. Avengers Endgame, I believe, got one nomination. Joe, do you know what it is off the top of your head? It was Visual Effects.
Visual effects.
Was Avengers Endgame. That's right. Yeah. Up against, hopefully the Irishman wins, Lion King, Brutal. That got nominated for Best Visual Effects. Star Wars, did it get nominated? Star Wars for a couple. Best Original Score, that always happens, for God's sakes. John Williams, hasn't he won enough? Best Visual Effects, Best Sound Editing. Like, give some other score. Listen, you know what should have been nominated for score, Joe, is our boy Daniel Pemberton for Motherless Brooklyn. That's a great score, which was ignored in favor of another Star Wars nomination. Like, come on.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. And I just think it goes back to the popularity vote and more people seeing Star Wars and John Williams being a name versus Motherless Brooklyn being a smaller independent movie.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Maybe Randy Newman will win for Marriage Story. He does get nominated there. All right, that's the Oscar nods and our feedback to it. Like I said, Scott Feimer coming up momentarily is tremendous. He'll break it down for you really well. Any issues or concerns, you can tweet me, CinephilePod or Adnan S. For a couple movies to review, beginning with The Report. The story of Daniel Jones, lead investigator for the U.S. Senate's sweeping study into the CIA's detention and interrogation program, which was found to be brutal, immoral, and ineffective. With the truth at stake, Jones battled tirelessly to make public what many in power sought to keep hidden. terrific film here from Scott Z. Burns. Adam Driver plays Daniel Jones, who is the investigator who is digging deep into what exactly the CIA did, what the government did. And it is a deeply disturbing film. It shows, as Glaberman mentioned in his review, what you think you know, right? You've heard about waterboarding and what Abu Ghraib is and punishment of prisoners. When you watch this film, it is very in your face and it is gripping, because not only do you have Driver combing through evidence and stories, and so it has a that feeling of, you know, truly an investigative journalism movie, but also you've got all those scenes of the torture being done, and it is shocking. I mean, you may think what happens to these people, but I mean, they're blasting Metallica, they're throwing water in their faces, they're drowning them, they're torturing them. I mean, it is horrific, and it goes well beyond what is sanctioned by the UN and what humanist tactics are for interrogating and investigating and browbeating potential terrorists or any sort of persons of danger. So those scenes in particular, Burns is making his directorial debut here. He wrote and directed it. But those scenes in particular are very visceral. Annette Bening is very good. Also, Senator Dianne Feinstein, she's the one who is ordering all of this, and she's the one who has to keep rapping back and forth there with Driver as to what exactly is happening, what the latest evidence is, how they can go about through Congress in persecuting these people, whether or not that's even possible. She does not get nominated for Best Supporting Actress, by the way. There's a chance she would. I believe she was up either for a SAG or a Golden Globe. But regardless, Bening is really good in the movie. And Driver, the year of Adam Driver, man. God, I'm hoping he wins for Marriage Story. But he's also very good in this movie. I mean, you talk about a guy who's having, as Dan Stanzik would say, something of a moment right now. He's in Star Wars, for God's sakes, playing Kylo Ren, and then he's here playing an investigative reporter, and he's playing a divorced father who's dealing with all of that. So it's another strong performance from Driver. His character really radiates intelligence and inquisitiveness as he's fighting for the truth, but never does it on a melodramatic level. You've also got other good members of the cast, John Hamm, who's playing a guy who's involved with Barack Obama's team. Maura Tierney, I always loved her. She's from News Radio. She plays Bernadette. She's somebody who's actually sanctioning a lot of these torture methods. But it is definitely an eye-opening way in looking at what the U.S. government has done in the past and what should be or shouldn't be done. And maybe you'll watch the film and say, hey, I'm good with this. Okay, I don't care if they're terrorists or not terrorists. If they're suspected of doing it, you torture them however you want to. But I think most people watch this and just be horrified by it. Michael O'Sullivan of the Washington Post writes, the report takes a more conventional approach to storytelling, framing the narrative as flashbacks to unidentified black sites where we watch CIA contractors waterboard detainees. And Peter Travers of Rolling Stone says, Burns believes that the granular details of cerebral inquiry into issues of morality are more than enough to hold our rapt attention. He's right. I'm giving 3 Maple Leafs to the report. A very provocative and very good film, Joe.
To your point, Adam Driver, the thing I love about all the movies he came out with this year is just they're so different in the range of it. He's doing an investigative journalism movie, and then he's a villain in a Star Wars movie. Then he's just playing a guy going through a divorce in Marriage Story. And next year, he's going to be in The Last Duel, a period piece. And he'll also be in Annette, where he'll be playing a stand-up comedian. So, I'm excited to see what he's doing going forward. Of those movies, which one do you like the best?
I would say Marriage Story, I think, is the best of the movies. But the report surprised me because I hadn't heard a lot about it. And obviously was ignored during award season, but I think it's pretty good. Aside from Bening, who had gotten a little bit of buzz. But yeah, I would go with Marriage Story, I think, is the best. If you haven't seen Marriage Story, I think that's the one to watch because he's just, he's electric in that film. One more review before we get to Scott Feinberg. That would be Dark Waters. A tenacious attorney uncovers a dark secret that connects a growing number of unexplained deaths to one of the world's largest corporations. While trying to expose the truth, he soon finds himself risking his future, his family, and his own life. High expectations. All right, Mark Ruffalo even sent me a note, for God's sakes, because you remember the BFCA, Broadcast Film Critics Association. I love Ruffalo. I think he's a good dude. I loved him, and You Can Count on Me. I was so happy when he got nominated for an Oscar, supporting actor, a few years back for Foxcatcher. But this is a real disappointment. I mean, this was just a boring movie. Let's be honest here, okay? Whereas The Report is about a guy digging into papers and research, and yet they make it in a very compelling manner. This is a slog. I mean, this is a movie which is important with a capital I, and it's telling you so, and yet there's nothing gripping about it. I mean, it's just so tedious trying to watch this film, despite a very good cast. Not only Ruffalo, who plays the character as straight, which means he's kind of bland. There's really not a lot to the guy. Anne Hathaway, who importantly is saddled with the unfortunate role of being the complaining wife who has to give one unfortunate speech in a hospital. She's going to be calling her agent going, seriously, how did I get this role? Tim Robbins, good to see him in a role again. He's playing Mark Ruffalo's boss. Again, good actor, but he's spoiled. Bill Pullman, Victor Garber, Bill Camp. Bill Camp is always great. He's in The Night Of. He's also in a new HBO show, The Outsider, which I'll be reviewing in a few weeks. But Dark Water's a real miss, man. I mean, it kept making me think about it. That's what we're going to do, the Mount Rushmore of movies which are about topics like this, uncovering corporate malfeasance, but to do so in a manner that allows you to raise your arms with righteous indignity. This movie just puts you to sleep. And it's a real miss from Todd Haynes, who's the director. Todd Haynes, this guy is known for, you know, these beautiful, lush period pieces and homages. Far From Heaven is a wonderful film with Julianne Moore and Dennis Haysbert and Dennis Quaid. He did Carol, which is about a lesbian romance starring Cate Blanchett. Like, Todd Haynes does some beautiful indie movies. And this time, I mean, this is just a paycheck movie. He's like, all right, I just want to show you I can make some money and do something quick and dirty, a little more straightforward. But it has nothing of a signature appeal. It just felt like somebody else could do it, which is the worst kind of criticism you can give to a filmmaker as a really unique style. This was run-of-the-mill and unfortunately pretty dry. Dark Waters from Joe Morgenstern is Mr. Ruffalo's film, both in its gestation and execution. His passion has been well served. I respectfully will disagree with Jay Morgenstern. I love Mark Ruffalo, and I agree it was a passion project. I think he co-produced it, but it's a boring movie. And what he's fighting for is important. I mean, this is DuPont and chemical dumping, and his character ended up winning a case of like $671 million, which is, you know, some small solace to these people who are poisoned by contaminated water by a company that knew this. Big business, the bad guy once again. But in terms of issue-oriented movies, this was not something that was riveting. Joe, I'm going to tell you to skip Dark Waters. I'm giving it 1.5 Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I will definitely skip it then. It kind of seems like the kind of movie that is, hey, you're going to take down this company, and everyone's telling the guy not to do it, and he goes, watch me. And then and then that's it, you know?
I was about to say, there may be even a scene he actually does that. You're right. He's telling Tim Robbins what he's going to do, because he's one of these guys. He's one of these corporate attorneys who normally defends guys like this, and then, as you mentioned, he ends up pulling like an Edward Snowden here just to try to get the bad guys. But yeah, I would avoid it. Here's someone you should never avoid. Scott Feinberg, right now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A real pleasure to bring in our friend Scott Feinberg, who we've had on Cinephile in the past. I was at the Critics' Choice Awards a year ago, and I saw you in the distance on the red carpet, and I couldn't get to you. And then I was actually at the Uncut Gems premiere, because my buddy Ben Lyons hooked me up, and you ran the panel with Adam Sandler and Idina Menzel, did a great job. So one of these days we're going to meet, but thanks so much for joining us, man.
Yeah.
Scott, you can follow on Twitter, at Scott Feinberg. Literally, there's nobody better than him when it comes to covering the entertainment industry. And ever since I started listening to the Awards Chatter podcast, my knowledge and appreciation for cinema has grown by leaps and bounds. So everybody out there, subscribe now. The Hollywood Reporter Awards Chatter podcast.
Thank you.
Dude. Well, listen, we're going to talk about the Pacino interview, which you were kind enough to invite me to, and I couldn't make it. But listen, Al is unbelievable. But let's get to the Oscar nominations first and foremost. You, Ben Lyons, Jason Horowitz, there's a few people on my timeline. You guys are the most passionate supporters of Honey Boy, which I saw in all of your recommendation, and it's terrific. I mean, it reminded me of this boy's life. I mean, that was very raw, and I would have loved to have seen him recognized, not only for lead actor or supporting actor, excuse me, but even a screenplay nomination would have been nice. How outraged were you, Scott, when you saw the nominations? Although I think you had it coming, because you were already tweeting after you got ignored for the SAGs that you kind of felt like the Oscar nomination was not going to be coming.
Well, yeah, I had already kind of become reconciled to the idea that this wasn't going to pan out. And, you know, it's I at the same time, I you know, yes, I was extremely disappointed and confused why this movie was not gaining more traction. But at the same time, I have to say, I feel like it has certainly put Alma Harrell, the director, on the map. And, you know, people are certainly talking about and aware of who she is now. I'm one of these people who I'm not as quick as some to attribute, you know, certain misses of nominations to biases. I don't think the same people who, you know, necessarily gave Moonlight Best Picture a few years ago suddenly became more or less bigoted. I know there have been efforts to increase the diversity of the organization, and I think that's great. I think that just sometimes it comes down less to people's feelings about you know, gender or race than the fact that a movie like Honey Boy just didn't get the same level of promotion for whatever reason. Sometimes it's budget, sometimes it's you know, just a company that has too many movies. You know, certain movies get campaigned more than others, more aggressively. I'm very, you know, I was bummed that it didn't get in there, but I think that there are sort of explanations for a lot of the ones that people are outraged about not getting in there.
And I agree with your point that sometimes, you know, at least they'll get recognized enough within industry circles that maybe the next film will get more attention. And I think of Last Black Man in San Francisco in that respect, a movie which I loved, which also did not get recognized. But I think enough people, Scott, know Joe Talbot and Jimmy Fails and say, okay, whatever movie these next guys make, they're definitely going to get attention for that. Kind of like P.T. Anderson with Hard Eight, and then all of a sudden Boogie Nights exploded, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I loved Last Black Man in San Francisco. That was right there with Honey Boy on my personal top 10 list. But the reality is that I am paid to see a lot of these movies at film festivals. And so I see a ton of these movies. The Academy members, everyone sort of assumes that this is that they have time to watch 75 movies. The reality is many of them are still, and increasingly, increasing number of them are still very active in their careers. And while it would be nice if they could see as many movies as I do, many, you know, we're lucky if they see probably 12 to 15 before they vote of the main contenders. And so what ends up happening is that, and this is why millions of dollars are spent on campaigning. It's not because studios want to blow their money. It's because it's such a fight to try to get your movie to be one of the 12 to 15 that they see. And, you know, the movies that we've been talking about, Honey Boy, Last Black Man in San Francisco, they had certain disadvantages in that, you know, Last Black Man in San Francisco, nobody had heard of anybody associated with that movie prior to that movie. And, you know, it's not going to probably therefore be one of the 12 to 15 that people rush to see. I'm not condoning that members don't see more movies before they vote than they do, but I live in reality, and I think I don't think it was because, and you know, some people would argue, well, it wasn't prioritized because the filmmakers are people of color. I don't believe that. I think that there are certainly some people who are narrow, you know, close-minded, inexcusably. But I really cover these people all the time. I get that there can also be unconscious bias and things like that. I'm just skeptical that was the reason, as opposed to just awareness of, you know, certain movies get promoted more. Last Black Man in San Francisco was one of about eight movies that A24 was trying to promote, along with Midsommar and a whole bunch of others. And in the end, the only thing that any of A24's movies got was one single nomination for the cinematography of The Lighthouse. So again, sometimes the situation here may have been that they felt obligated to sort of treat all of their eight movies more or less the same. And that can actually screw all of them in a sense, because nobody's really being highlighted.
A lot of great points you make, specifically the fact that these people are watching them at home as well. Like, I think of a movie like 1917, and you and I are lucky enough to see it on a big screen, perhaps, but for a lot of these people, they're not watching it the way you should be, which is in the biggest screen possible. So that will impact your nomination, your voting as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's what kind of has made this argument about Netflix sort of funny, where people are, some people, and I think fewer than ever this year, but there's been these, some people raising concerns that, well, we can't consider Netflix movies because they're not primarily seen on the big screen. Well, neither are most of the movies that you're, in terms of the ones that you're considering for voting. As you say, because of the fact that many Academy members, let's say it's because they're busy or whatever, they have families, they can only get out so much, whatever the reasons, a large number of these movies are being watched on small screens, just like a lot of Netflix movies are. And in fact, the Academy this year introduced a service that allows members to stream all Best Picture hopefuls, essentially, as long as the company distributor pays a token amount to put it on their on the Academy streaming service. You know, the Academy is now streaming Best Picture contenders to their members. So I think it's just the reality of the world we live in. Things are going to change and evolve. And yeah, it's certainly, it's sad that the theatrical experience isn't what it used to be, but the reality is it isn't what it used to be. It's not fun to go to a theater and have everybody around you lighting up their phones every 2 seconds and people being obnoxious and popcorn costing $20 and all of this stuff that, you know, things have changed. And why wouldn't you for whatever it is, 10 bucks a month to use one of these streaming services if they're, and you know, a lot of the mid-range movies, mid-range budget movies that used to come out during Oscar season not that long ago, they don't exist anymore except on streaming services, which is sad, but that's just, that's the reason why so many of the top, you know, most talented people in the business are now going to work with them, because they're just not, the kinds of movies that they want to make are not being made anymore by others.
Yeah, as you and I both know, those indie movies that we would have loved, those kitchen sink dramas, you know, like Ordinary People or Manchester by the Sea, like now you're right, those to go to the words of streaming services because they're not going to get the big theatrical release.
Right. And, you know, the fact that Martin Scorsese is now in business with Netflix and, you know, you can go with people who are partnering with Hulu. Clooney was working with Hulu. Amazon, you know, same thing. It's just these people have seen the writing on the wall and they can either choose to participate in the world as it is or gripe about the fact that the world isn't the way they want it to be. And I think this is just, you know, time marches on.
All right. So speaking of time marching on, time stops for nothing. And when you look at The Irishman, this is an incredible motion picture. And it, as I said, when I saw the New York Film Festival, Scott, I said, so elegiac. That was the only word that came to mind, right? Mournful and sad about the passing of time and these great legends, you know, saddling up for one last frontier. And then when I look at the nominations, again, I had resigned myself that De Niro was not going to get nominated after seeing the SAGs and the Golden Globes omissions. But and the question always becomes this, because as a kid, I used to always get mad and somebody said, well, how do you know if he's better than the other person? Art is subjective and all the rest of it. So even when I get outraged that De Niro is not nominated, I look at the nominees and say, okay, who should he have replaced? So when I look at the nominees, I say, listen, I was thrilled that Banderas got in, by the way, because I saw Pain and Glory and I love Almodovar's work and Banderas has never been nominated. So I'm happy to see a movie like that recognized. Leo's terrific in Once Upon a Time. Driver, I believe, should win for Marriage Story, although I don't believe he will. Jonathan Pryce is a revelation in The Two Popes, 72-year-old, never nominated. The quibble I have is Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, and he's a great actor. We all know that, the master, and Walk the Line. But this is not a great performance. I thought he was mannered, and it was over the top, and I didn't think it had any sort of subtlety or nuance. And by the time he had another slow-motion montage of him dancing, and I got to listen to Rock and Roll Part 2, I said, you got to be kidding me. I mean, that movie, I thought Joker was so derivative. Scott, what I said was when I saw Todd Phillips nominated, I said, oh, great, so they're nominating him for copying Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver and the King of Comedy. Like, this is absurdity. Like, 11 nominations. Can you at least shed some light to me what people in the industry are saying? Why is a film like Joker taken with so many? Because I've got to be honest with you, I found it thoroughly mediocre and disappointing.
You know, I don't think I hated it as much as you. I had some reservations more about what it might inspire crazy people in the world to do, as other movies have done, including Taxi Driver with, of course, what happened with
John Hinckley, the Reagan assassin.
Yeah, John Hinckley. Attempt. Yeah. So, I mean, look, I think that what I my experience speaking with Academy members has been that even those who don't like the movie or what it stands for or whatever, they feel that Joaquin did a very good job, and I do think he's probably gonna win. He's been winning everything so far. I think the movie it's an interesting case study in that, look, thank God there hasn't been a huge mass shooting on the level of some that we've seen since that movie began rolling out. I mean, there have been obviously many sort of smaller scale ones, and those are terrible too, but nothing large scale. If there is, God forbid, one, and unfortunately, just based on the rate at which these have happened in our society, there's unfortunately likely to be more until things are changed with our laws. I think that that movie is sort of like a living, breathing thing in that, you know, there's that great soliloquy in Sideways about wine, how it's changing and whatever over time. I mean, if there's another big shooting, yes, this movie, which was the most nominated of the year, I think people may run in the other direction, because it will force people to think again about what message are we looking to send with our Oscar vote. And the reality is, yeah, you know, Samuel Goldwyn or whoever said, if you want to send a message, you know, use what's the telegram service or whatever. But the reality is that for as long as there have been Oscars, people have chosen winners that generally they're trying to say something about the world or the industry or whatever. And I think that it's unlikely the Joker, under the best of circumstances, is actually going to win Best Picture. But I think that it's the kind of thing, same with Jojo Rabbit, where it's like people have to really think about, and I think they are really thinking about, what is the message it sends if we get behind this movie, even with, you know, 11 nominations. It's a big statement that Hollywood championed Joker as much as it did. And I think what you know, I was a tad surprised that it did as well as 11 nominations. I knew it was going to do well, especially after BAFTA. The Brits liked it even more than we did. I was very surprised that it was their nomination leader as well. But I think it's just people have sort of gotten behind it to an extent that I am finding a little bit hard to understand. But the Joaquin part of it, I think, is it's more like, you know, a lot of times you wait for a moment in this industry, or the voters do, wait for a moment to celebrate an actor who you respect. Often it's not even solely for that role. It's sort of like, here's the opportunity. We may not have another one. Let's acknowledge Joaquin. But I do think a lot of people feel it is an Oscar-worthy performance, and I think that Adam Driver is still a relatively new quantity here in the business, and I thought he was great as well. I personally would probably vote for Jonathan Pryce, just because I thought Two Popes was the best movie of the year, and I was disappointed it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. But it's very interesting, absolutely, that Joker did as well as it did.
Two Popes is terrific, man. I went into that thinking, I don't understand why this is getting such buzz, and maybe it's going to be a little dry. It's funny, it's smart, it's intelligent, it's really well-directed, of course, from Nuno Morales, who did City of God.
Yeah.
Mark Carton's script is terrific. I'm glad he got that. I'm with you. I thought the Two Popes is a really pleasant surprise. I was really hoping it would break through for Best Picture. The biggest surprise in many ways was J-Lo being ignored for Hustlers. Now, I thought it was a fairly average movie, Scott. I thought she's great. I mean, she's very magnetic and charismatic. But I didn't think it was a particularly notable movie. But I didn't see Florence Pugh getting nominated. Maybe Annette Bening for The Report or something else. But Pugh, when you don't get a Golden Globe or a SAG nomination, I generally think you're out, just like your guy Shia or my guy De Niro. So how did Florence Pugh get in ahead of J-Lo?
Well, I'm not even sure that Florence Pugh's the one that knocked her out. It could have been Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell.
Right.
I thought, yeah, and you know, the thing was, and I'm going to do a little humble brag here for a second, I, at the last minute, pulled J-Lo from my final predictions for a nomination because of the fact that I think it really came back to what I had learned last year when I, like pretty much everyone, picked Glenn Close to win over Olivia Colman, and then that didn't happen. Just as a few years earlier, a lot of us had Lady Gaga and Diane Warren's song, Till It Happens to You, winning over the Bond song. And what I was reminded is, again, Academy members are only seeing a certain number of movies. Is a doc, you know, and they presumably are only going to vote for something in something they've seen. So if a movie is a across-the-board contender, like, let's say, The Favorite was, versus a movie where it's the one thing that somebody's talking about, like the documentary was where the Gaga song was in, I think that people, if they're only seeing a handful, they're going to prioritize the one that people are talking about across the board. And so as that pertains to J-Lo, as you've said, you know, it's not a movie that people widely embraced as a movie overall. It was pretty much highlighting her. Some people like the screenplay, which I was a fan of also, but the reality was this was not going to be a movie that was going to be prioritized by Academy members. I don't know that acting branch members of the Academy, the ones who choose the actors' acting nominations, necessarily hold J-Lo in the highest regard because, you know, she's done a few excellent performances, but she's also done a lot of paycheck movies and crap and not really focused on acting until recently. And so it's not that they didn't, I don't think they that none of them voted for her, but I think that they prioritized probably an actor's actor like Kathy Bates, who was very good in a movie that was also not widely embraced, but, you know, that was one where I think that, you know, they just maybe respect her more as an actor. But I also don't think Hustlers played well internationally. It did do well at the box office internationally, but I don't know that, I mean, J-Lo, I believe, was not nominated by BAFTA, which was another warning sign that, you know, this is not necessarily a movie that translates everywhere as just what we think of as an awards movie. Now, there are people that say we need to reconsider what we think of as awards kinds of movies. That's, I guess, a legitimate point, but I don't know how you really force people to do that. And so just with the current dynamics being what they are, I thought there was a chance she'd miss.
Scott Feinberg, not a fan of Made in Manhattan. He believes that that is a paycheck movie from J-Lo. We'll knock that one down. to the real feel-good story, Scott, and that is Parasite. Listen, you and I see it. We all know it's incredible. It's bonkers. It did great at Cannes, wins the Palme d'Or. I said, okay, it's a lock for foreign film. After that, we'll see. Well, I was thrilled. As you and I both know, it's a big indicator. Yeah. You get a legit shot at Best Picture if you're nominated for editing. And the editing nominees... Yep. Are Ford versus Ferrari, not going to win. Irishman, good chance. Jojo Rabbit, maybe. Joker, as you said earlier, probably not Best Picture. And Parasite. So I'm like, Parasite's in for editing, and then for production design, and screenplay, and director, and picture. I said, okay, you're missing on the acting stuff. That's fine. But Slumdog Millionaire won without acting nominations. And God, absolutely, it would be incredible. If Parasite wins Best Picture, I would be, listen, I love The Irishman, but Parasite's a hell of a movie.
Oh, it would be a great moment for movies, for the Oscars, which, you know, they have, that's the kind of thing where, you know, not only has the Academy been working to increase the number of women and people of color, but also of people based outside of the United States in their membership. And so I think the openness to subtitled movies last year, Roma was tied for the most nominations. You know, in all of the history of the Academy, I think there's been about a dozen, I think this may have been the 11th movie that was nominated for Best Picture that was primarily not in English, and none has ever won. So to have, as you say, nominations sort of across the board, when, you know, we should remind people, the nominations for editing, for instance, are chosen only by the film editors. The nominations for directing are chosen only by the director. So the fact that a movie gets a lot of nominations in different areas suggests that there's obviously, you know, sort of widespread enthusiasm for the movie overall. And I think that with the preferential ballot that they now use to pick the Best Picture winner, it sort of rewards a movie that everyone at least likes or doesn't dislike. And I think that, you know, we hear very polarizing reactions about Joker and Jojo Rabbit and even to some extent The Irishman and others. I don't really know anyone who hates Parasite and roots against it. It's such a kind of unusual movie and a feel-good story behind the movie. So I think it's actually possible.
God, it would be amazing. I'm with you. This is what happened with Green Book, right? Everyone said, how could that win Best Picture? You said, well, listen, nobody hated it. Some people didn't love it. Right. But if you rank it third or fourth in your ballot, you rank up the totals cumulatively, it ends up winning.
And, you know, there were people who hated it, but yeah.
No, that's true. Yeah, well, I was going to say, after it won Best Picture, then everybody really started killing
then
it.
Then everybody, you know, the woke generation. Suddenly nobody liked it,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Then everybody. Yeah. Awards Chatter is the podcast. Make sure you check it out. Scott gets unbelievable guests, like about as A-list as it gets. And I want to talk about Pacino. Because, listen, I adore him like we all do. I still have the VHS tape when he was on with Larry King. I remember when he did Rosie O'Donnell a few years ago. No studio audience because he's so, you know, shy. He's going to be on Kimmel this Thursday. And then you did your first ever live podcast for Awards Chatter with Al. And, listen, the stories are amazing. And everyone has to listen to it. It's a solid hour 40. I mean, he gave you a lot of his time. And the stories are familiar, perhaps, to some about Coppola and, you know, fighting from The Godfather, his friendship with Frank Serpico, where Attica derived from, you know, the fact Lumet was going to direct Scarface. But the fact that your level of knowledge and research was so good. I mean, you mentioned the 8th grade teacher, which surprised him. And here's a few things. One, thank you so much for clarifying, because he always mentioned Charlie Lawton. Every single interview, he always mentions Charlie Lawton, his mentor. And that is not the Charles Lawton who was in Mutiny on the Bounty. So I already laughed. Thank you for clarifying that for everybody. And also, the fact that I always wanted to know, like, what does he do now? And this is one of the best parts of the interview is he was talking about Hunters and the fact the streaming services, and he said he loves Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I said, I just picture Al Pacino in his, right? Imagine Al in his Manhattan apartment sitting there watching Tony Shalhoub with Rachel Brosnahan. I was so happy to hear that.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, tell me all about Al, just that experience. What was he like?
Well, first, I just have to tell you, last week I was moderating a Q&A with the cast of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and I was sharing with them that Al had said this, and Rachel Brosnahan was like, this is, this is one of the weirdest things that, and, you know, she was so flattered and touched, like, can't wrap her head around the fact that Al Pacino is a fan. It wasn't even just of the show. He was saying, I just love that girl from Maisel, who talking about Brosnahan. So that was, it was fun and a kind of a humanizing thing to just, you know, we think of him as such a kind of guy up on a mountain, a god of this business, but he's actually came across as incredibly humble. He was asking if there were actors in the audience and then sort of greeted them as brothers and sisters, and just couldn't have been a nicer guy and an ideal guest for a live podcast, because some people shut down in front of an audience. He actually, I think, was more generous with his time and memories because he could sense the enthusiasm and admiration of the audience. So I was really thrilled to have him do it. I was sorry you couldn't join us. Would love to have you come to the next one, which we're in the process of scheduling now. But it was definitely one of the most special ones out of 300 some odd that we've done at this point.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, one of the other bright parts you had too, and I was just so happy to see him nominated. He hasn't been nominated since Scent of a Woman, which was 1992. And right. I was so happy you mentioned Donnie Brasco, and you cited that review which said that Al, when he knows it's the end, that's some of the best silent acting he's ever done in his career. I agree. I thought he should have been nominated for Donnie Brasco, which I love so much. I love The Insider too, 1999. He did not get nominated for that film as well. But that was a great line you said to him. Every time I mention that Pacino's my favorite actor, everyone always is the same thing. Always an over actor. And you had that great line about the fact that you quoted what he said, which is that some actors are like a tenor. Tell us what that line was specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I found just in my research where somebody had said, you know, sometimes you go really big, Al, what's that about? And he's like, you know, I see myself as a tenor. You got to see how big you can go. And, you know, sometimes that you can overdo it, but at the same time, you know, sometimes you hit that note and it would be a shame not to try. And so, yeah, he acknowledges that, he joked about it a couple of times that sometimes he may overact, but, you know, reaching for it also allows him to go places with his performances that others just, you know, very few others have ever gotten.
On a personal note, host to host, broadcaster to broadcaster, favorite guest you ever had, and was David Crosby the most difficult? I remember seeing your tweet. And I said, oh, my God, I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, I've been very lucky in that we've had very few bad experiences with guests, because generally if they're coming on, it's because they know it's in their interest to be there. And we're happy. We've asked them, or their reps have reached out to us to do it. And the biggest people in the world have been just lovely. So, you know, I would actually say, and it's not because she might be the biggest celebrity in the world, but because she was so incredibly humble and generous with her, you know, talking about things that I've never heard her say before. But my favorite, I tend to say, is Oprah, because I thought, you know, you feel like you know everything about this person. She had a show for decades where she basically talked about her own life, and yet I learned a lot of new things even after voluminous research to prep for it. I couldn't have been more grateful to her for being as open and generous as she was. So that's the one that I generally point people towards to say, like, you know, if you want to get a sense of what we can do on this podcast, this is an example.
I thought Clooney was a pretty great one too. I was so happy you mentioned good. When you asked him, hey, what's the movie, you know, film school years from now, George Clooney 101, what's the one you want to study? I was so happy he said Good Night and Good Luck. I love that movie.
Yes. And I think, you know, for him, it's a movie where, you know, it's sort of a tribute to his own dad who was in news. It's a, he's a student of history. And I think that, you know, he directed it. He was, I believe, a writer of it. He played as he does in all the movies that he directs, he played a small part in it, but, you know, basically stood aside so that he could you know, shine a light on a lesser known actor, in that case, David Strathairn. And I couldn't have been more impressed with Clooney either.
Scott Feinberg's the best. He's got a run. I know he has an interview. I think another one to do right now, right? I believe in minutes. So I could do this obviously for hours. You can follow him on Twitter at Scott Feinberg. He's also on Instagram. And Awards Chatter is a podcast. And of course, The Hollywood Reporter is the publication, which I subscribe to. All of you should read it. Scott does all his awards pundits. There's no one better on the awards. I don't know how you do it, man. Awesome stuff.
Thank
I really appreciate
you so much, Adam. I appreciate it. I enjoy your coverage very much also. So thanks a lot.
Mount Rushmore.
And now it's time for the Mount Rushmore of journalism movies. I just saw my brother. He was telling me he liked our Mount Rushmore war movies, but was saying that was a pretty tough list. I think the Deer Hunter is the one that people are upset about, and Saving Private Ryan, which we left off the list, but that's why it's called the Mount Rushmore. You can only include four Mount Rushmore journalism movies in honor of The Report and Dark Waters. Here are the best journalism films, at least in my view. The Insider. Love this film. Jeffrey Wigand. Russell Crowe. After having watched the Mike Wallace Is Here documentary, they talk about that whole issue, The Insider and Jeffrey Wigand. It reminded me of what a wonderful film The Insider is. So well directed by Michael Mann, who he just gets right into the subject matter. You know what I mean? It's gritty. It's tough. You're saying nicotine is a delivery. Cigarettes are a delivery device for nicotine. You put it in your mouth, suck it in. You're going to get your fix. Russell Crowe. I mean, Pacino's phenomenal. Lowell Bergman playing the journalist. I would have loved to see an Al get nominated. That was 1999. The Insider is a movie that I really, really think was one of the best films of 1999, which, as we've talked about before, one of the best movie years ever. Hopefully you've all read that book. So The Insider is a no-brainer. Spotlight won Best Picture. Again, this is a movie about journalism that shouldn't be this exciting, and it shouldn't be this galvanizing, but that's what I felt watching Spotlight. Again, Ruffalo, tremendous. Michael Keaton's the best. Tom McCarthy is the guy who wrote the script, directed it. McCarthy's a really talented guy. You know, he's obviously an actor. He's also in The Wire, but he's also the director, has done some notable works in the past. So Spotlight won Best Picture. I was very happy to see that when it won. Network, I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore. Absolute lock. Peter Finch. We'll be talking about, by the way, the films of 1976 in a second for Total Recall. But Sidney Lumet, one of the greatest scripts ever by Paddy Chayefsky. Whole cast is amazing. So there's your three so far. This is very painful to keep out Reds because I love that Warren Beatty movie. And he won Best Director for it. I mean, tough pick movie, but Communism back in 1981. And it's brilliant. Brilliant. But I'm going to go with Good Night and Good Luck. As I just mentioned, it's Scott Feinberg. It's my favorite George Clooney movie, and it's the movie that's most important to George Clooney. 90 minutes, black and white, jazz soundtrack, good luck making any money, and yet George makes it happen. It gets nominated for Best Picture. I believe he was up for Best Director. He definitely wasn't nominated as Fred Friendly for Supporting Actor, but I believe he was up for Picture and Director. I think he got 7 nominations. Love that movie. David Strathairn, one of the great character actors of our time, magical as Edward R. Murrow. I mean, there's one scene, I remember watching the commentary track. Clooney goes, look at him, look at his face. He goes, looks like a bulldog the way he looks at the camera. Good night and good luck. Edward R. Murrow fighting a crusader for justice, Joe, the way every broadcaster like me dreams of. Those are my favorites as far as the Mount Rushmore of journalism movies. You can now make the case for Anchorman or Frost Nixon or All the President's Men. Have at it.
All right. Well, I agree with you with Network. That's just an iconic movie. I'm going to throw on His Girl Friday from 1940. I haven't seen it.
A little screwball dialogue.
Little screwball, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Fast paced. I saw it in college. I really liked it. All the President's Men, for me, has to go on that list. Just Pacula. That crane shot where they're in the Library of Congress just going up and up. I don't even know how you would storyboard something like that. And then I will go with Spotlight as well. Definitely love that movie. I don't think enough people saw it, even though it did really well during award season, but definitely Spotlight too.
All right, good list, man. All the President's Men. Jason Robards won an Oscar for his performance, which we're going to get to. Now, what the hell? Let's do it right now. Total Recall, next.
Total Recall.
All right, now it's time for Total Recall. We mentioned Jason Robards, we mentioned Network, so let's do it, man. This is Academy Awards 1977, films from 76. We're testing all of your film knowledge out there, although I'm really proud of my guy Joe for dropping His Girl Friday. And by the way, in terms of giving props, my brother watched Always Be My Maybe on your recommendation because you mentioned the Keanu Reeves cameo, and he said you were right. Keanu Reeves cameo, off the charts, all-timer. You were vindicated, Joe.
So good. You have to watch it. Next time you have a few hours to kill, please do it.
All right, once we get through Oscar season, February 10th, I promise you, I'm going to watch Blowout for you. I owe you that one. Well, my cousin was going to watch Atlanta. I'm behind on Donald Glover. I mean, there's a lot to do, but you're right. Best Picture, start us off, 1977 Academy Awards. These are the films of 1976.
We have Rocky, All the President's Men, Bound for Glory, Network, and Taxi Driver.
Joe picked out this year because it is a notable year for nominees. I remember going back to this, going, oh my God, try picking these. I've never seen Bound for Glory. My winner is Taxi Driver, the definitive film about loneliness and urban alienation. Absolute brilliance. Although a very, very close second would be Network. I would have had no issue if that had won. I know Rocky's iconic. I know all of you from Philadelphia like the running up the stairs and all the rest of it. It's a sweet movie. And yes, for its time, it was pretty good. And I like the fact he doesn't win. I give it props. When I watch Rocky, oh, he doesn't win at the end. That's interesting. I always thought he was, because the rest of the Rockies are so formulaic and generic. The first Rocky actually was surprising. That Rocky goes the distance, loses the fight, but of course wins because he shows the fortitude, the perseverance, Adrian, all the rest of it. Never should have won Best Picture. It should have been Taxi Driver or Network. Joe?
I'm going to go with Network. Movie ahead of its time. Really, really called kind of today's media. And so I'll go with Network.
All right. Best Director.
John G. Alvinson for Rocky. Alan J. Pakula for All the President's Men. Ingmar Bergman for Face to Face. Sidney Lumet for Network. And Lena Wertmüller for Seven Beauties.
I know you have a fondness for Lena Wertmüller. And Alan J. Pakula is certainly a notable director. Ingmar Bergman, I mean, is one of the heavyweight champions here for foreign cinema. So, by the way, Joe is part Swedish, so you should be definitely going for Ingmar Bergman here. I mean, you think about Swedish cinema and Persona and Cries and Whispers and all the rest of it. For me, it's got to be Lumet. Lumet, one of the all-time great directors. And Network is brilliant the way he was able to manage that script and get those kind of actors delivering line after line after line, and yet it's so funny and so scathing, and yet balances drama as well. I mean, that is a great director, and that's what Lumet was the best at, was bringing out the best in those around him, a true collaborator. I think it's Lumet for Network.
I have no arguments there, but I'm still going to go with Pakula for All the President's Men. Just how he framed each shot, how if you watch it, each character is framed within a grid. So no matter where they are, they're always stuck in between this whole grid system that he maps out subtly throughout the entire movie. And I love that. So I got to go with All the President's Men.
All right. Alan J. Pakula there. Best Actor. Good one.
Peter Finch, Network. Robert De Niro, Taxi Driver. Giancarlo Giannini, Seven Beauties. William Holden, Network. Sylvester Stallone, Rocky.
Finch, again, in Network, it's tough to imagine anybody else in the role. He won the award posthumously. He suffered a heart attack after the film. Unfortunately, never got to win the award in person. But I would go with Bob De Niro. On every corner in every city, there's a nobody dreaming of a somebody. It's one of the most iconic performances ever, highly influential. As he once said, I pictured Travis as a crab, that he kind of walked sideways. He kind of slithered around. And just the fact that he's this disenchanted character, this outsider. I mean, this is a character who so many other actors have tried to ape and mimic over the years, notably Joaquin Phoenix, who's about to win an Oscar for Joker. But nobody did it better than Bob. His Travis Bickle is indelible.
I 100% agree with you. I think a close second could be made for Stallone just because he is Rocky. I think he made that role, but Bob De Niro, and one of the most famous improvised scenes in Taxi Driver from Bob De Niro. So gotta go.
Yes, sir, you're talking to me. It just says Travis talks to himself in the mirror. And he said, "What did I do?" And he thought of a comedian he knew who kind of did that in his bit. So that's where he ended up being inspired by it. Not a bad call on Stallone being in there too, Joe. I'm with you. You know what? If I had to rank the ballot, I would put Stallone too, because you're right. Again, iconic role, wrote the script himself. Nobody else could do it. You can't picture anybody else in the role. So I'm with you. Stallone, a good runner up there. Best Actress.
Faye Dunaway, Network. Marie-Christine Barlot, Cousin Kazin. Talia Shire for Rocky, Sissy Spacek for Carrie, and Liv Ullmann for Face to Face.
I'd like to get Talia Shire some love for, obviously, because I love her so much from The Godfather. But yeah, Faye Dunaway. I mean, she's just so cruel and heartless as Diana Christensen. Rene Russo clearly was playing homage to her in Nightcrawler. Dunaway is amazing. I mean, she just shreds. And I mean, the classic Maneater. I mean, she's awesome in that movie.
100% agree. I got to go with Faye Dunaway, too.
Supporting actor.
Jason Robards for All the President's Men. Ned Beatty for Network, Burgess Meredith for Rocky, Laurence Olivier for Marathon Man, and Burt Young for Rocky.
Well, Ned Beatty, Burgess Meredith, and Laurence Olivier, all heavyweights. Ned Beatty, I loved him in Homicide. Laurence Olivier, especially the scene with the drill where he's about to torture Dustin Hoffman, is really good. And of course, he's one of the legendary Shakespearean actor. I will go with Burt Young, though, for Rocky. I just met Burt Young at SopranosCon. I mean, picture him as Paulie. He's the heart of the movie, right? You think of Stallone and his big heart. You think of him and Adrian. But I'm telling you, you can't have Rocky without Paulie. I would have liked seeing Burt Young win Best Supporting Actor.
That would have been amazing. I have no issue with that. I'm going to go with Ned Beatty because that monologue that he has towards the end of the movie in Network, is he nails it. And so just for that scene alone, I got to give him the award.
Yeah, it's so well shot by Lumet because he's in shadows the whole time. But you're right. It's funny and it's dark and it's so theatrical the way he delivers it. Just thundering down on Peter Finch. Yeah, Beatty was really good. I forgot he got nominated that year. Supporting actress.
Beatrice Straight for Network. Jane Alexander, All the President's Men, Jodie Foster, Taxi Driver, Lee Grant for Voyage of the Dam, and Piper Laurie for Carrie.
Beatrice Straight has the distinction of winning an Academy Award for the shortest ever screen time, 5 minutes and 40 seconds. That's what she's in for Network. She has one scene, maybe two scenes, but I know that its total is 5 minutes, 40 seconds. That definitely I can verify. And she's the cuckolded wife from William Holden, and she just gives this incredible monologue after knowing that she's been cheated upon by this guy, and she's kicking his ass out, and it's a hell of a performance, but it's gotta be Jodie Foster. Irish, man, are you kidding? She's 14 years old playing a 12-year-old prostitute. Who can do that? How hard is that to do? And yet she rated this character with charm, with intelligence, and as that scene where Travis takes her up for breakfast, I don't know who's weirder, you or me. She was awesome in Taxi Driver.
I agree with you. Definitely got to go with Jodie Foster.
Best original screenplay.
We have Network by Patty Chayefsky, Cousin Kazin, The Front, Rocky, and Seven Beauties.
Don't have an issue if Rocky had won, but I love the fact the guy who did win, Patty Chayefsky. I mean, there's just streams and streams of dialogue, which is so intelligent and so flamboyant and, like I said, scathing. And as you mentioned earlier, ahead of its time. And Patty Chayefsky predicted the future. He predicted network television. He predicted what would happen with cable news and Fox and MSNBC and all the rest of it. I mean, God, the guy not only was it funny and smart, but he also was a fortune teller. Got to be Patty Chayefsky for Network.
I agree with you. I 100% agree. And I know he's revered in screenwriting circles, too. So this seems to be his masterpiece. I got to go with him.
Speaking of revered in screenwriting circles, how about the guy who won Best Adapted Screenplay?
All the President's Men, William Goldman. We have Bound for Glory, Fellini's Casanova, The 7% Solution, Voyage of the Damned.
Would have loved to have seen Fellini's Casanova just to get Fellini in there winning an Academy Award, but he's made better films, obviously La Strada and 8.5. But I would go with All the President's Men, William Goldman. I mean, the guy's a heavyweight champion, Princess Bride, Misery. He did a lot of great movies over the years, The Sting, I believe. All the President's Men, absolutely. That was a worthy winner that year.
I completely agree. It has to be All the President's Men. Really, really strong year, but definitely All the President's Men.
And if I may say, a really strong episode here of Cinephile. Once again, thanks to Scott Feinberg. Follow him on Twitter at Scott Feinberg. We'll be back next time with reviews of two films, Waves and also A Hidden Life from Terrence Malick, and also a full recap of the Screen Actors Guild. The nominations and the awards are, The awards are coming out this Sunday. Tune in next week to Cinephile. Please do spread the word. Until then, I'll see you at the movies.